is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Moscow. The representative of the President of the United States, Steve Witkoff, to Moscow several times, but most recently to speak directly to Vladimir Putin about a settlement for Ukraine. I welcome Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft to comment on what we know about that conversation, most recent, between Mr. Witkoff, representing Donald Trump, and Mr. Putin. Anatole, a very good evening to you. I was repeatedly told three demands by Moscow. They're familiar, but I'll state them again because these are up to date. One, Zelensky and his administration must depart, a regime change in Kyiv. Two, the four provinces called Donbass, although there can be more, Luhansk, Donetsk, Kherson, and Zaporizhia, are to be annexed. Plus, Crimea means that that's the Russian territory. Three, Ukraine must disarm and not join NATO. Those are combined in some fashion. There are other details around cultural edges, but those three we've heard before, and they were repeated most recently. What do you make of those right now? Given we've dealt with them before, but they keep repeating them as if they're not negotiable. Do they sound like Moscow wants a deal, or is reverting to the Molotov style of always repeat yourself no matter what Churchill says? Good evening to you, Anatole.
Hello, John. Well, I mean, it depends on the details and whether Russia is going to stick to a maximalist version of these demands, or whether it has left any, you know, wiggle room for a compromise, because annexation of the territories which Russia has announced. I mean, the question is whether it's just a question, it will just be, you know, a ceasefire leaving these territories in Russian hands, or whether Russia actually expects demands that Ukraine and the West legally recognize these annexations. Well, that I don't think any Ukrainian government can do unless they've suffered a much bigger defeat, nor will the Europeans do that. So if Russia sticks permanently to that, I don't think that there can be a peace settlement. I mean, certainly not, you know, this year. Similarly, these four provinces, is Russia insisting that Ukraine withdraw from a large part of the territory of these provinces, which in fact Ukraine still holds? Because if so, I mean, once again, no Ukrainian government is going to do that. Unless, of course, Russia captures a lot of Ukrainian territory elsewhere in Ukraine, and is then, you know, there could be a territorial swap. But of course, Russia hasn't done that. We don't know whether it's possible. And regime change, well, I mean, if that's just a question of the Ukrainians holding new elections, at some stage they're going to have to do that anyway, presumably. But, I mean, you know, the Russian hardliners have been saying that this war must end with a friendly regime in Kyiv. Well, the only way, you know, you can get that is if, I mean, I don't know, I just don't see how it's possible given the feelings of Ukrainians about Russia now. So once again, it's a question of, you know, would the Russians accept new elections or more than that? And on disarmament, well, once again, I mean, the devil is in the details, because if it's just a question of, well, NATO membership, the US has already conceded it's not going to happen. And in fact, it isn't going to happen because the West is not prepared to fight for Ukraine. If disarmament means just not, you know, the West not giving Ukraine certain categories of, say, long-range missiles or main battle tanks, which frankly have not proved very useful in this war anyway, then I can imagine a deal. But if the Russians are saying that you must reduce the Ukrainian army to a level where it couldn't defend Ukraine, well, once again, I mean, that's totally unacceptable. The Ukrainians will never agree to it, and the Europeans will go on supporting them. So, I mean, my sense is that what's going to happen is that the Russians will launch another massive offensive this year, as the ground dries out, you know, after the spring thaw, and then we'll see what happens. Obviously, if the Russians break through and inflict a very heavy defeat on the Ukrainians, then they will stick to their maximalist demands or closer to them. But if the Ukrainians either fight the Russians to a standstill or, you know, surrender some territory as they have over the past year, but very slowly and inflicting heavy casualties, then, you know, Putin will be faced with a choice. Actually dial down the demands, and say, well, you know, but we never said exactly what these demands were. You know, these are what they actually mean, and then reduce them, or to face a situation in which he's going to have to go, you know, on and on and on. You know, that the war will go on into next year and the year after. And, I mean, if it goes on and on, then, of course, we're beginning to look. I mean, that's a long way ahead, but still. But at the 2028 US elections, when you could have a democratic government that would give much, much greater support to Ukraine. So, but, I mean, I think there is going to be, unfortunately, at least one more fighting season before, you know, these talks actually can lead to a conclusion.
Kirill Dmitriev, who is the banker in charge of the Sovereign Wealth Fund of Russia, a man partially educated in America, he's a very sophisticated speaker, traveled to Washington some weeks ago to meet with the president and his counselors. And the question was, what message did he carry in terms of settlement in Ukraine? And you tell me it was a commercial message. How is it that Russia believes that they can negotiate with Mr. Trump, with a sovereign wealth fund banker?
Well, simply, I mean, they can see, as everyone can, that Trump is enormously interested in commercial deals, especially when it comes to raw materials and rare earths, of which Russia has a huge quantity, most of which are now, of course, going to China to be processed. So, I mean, they're dangling this huge carrot in front of Trump's knows. And I think it's quite important from that point of view that Russia has just handed back to Italian ownership an Italian firm, not a very big one, called Ariston, which Russia seized after the beginning of the war, you know, in retaliation for EU sanctions. Well, I think what that is doing, you know, and Meloni is in Washington at the moment to talk tariffs with Trump. But I think, you know, the Russians are also trying to influence and please Meloni so that Meloni in turn brings an influence to bear on Trump. But of course, it's very difficult to see. I mean, I can't see how a major U.S. investment can begin while the war goes on. So this is an attempt to influence Trump, you know, to take a more positive attitude to Russia's demands during the peace talks.
Is there an alternative agenda for the Trump administration, to your understanding? That would be to separate Moscow and Beijing, or is that just speculation based on history?
No, I mean that thought is very much there in the Trump administration, you know, very strongly represented by Elbridge Colby, but also I think you know Vance has that idea in mind. I mean, I don't think that the sensible ones believe that it's possible, you know, to do, as has been said, a reverse Nixon and actually, you know, turn Russia into an enemy of China. I mean, that's just not going to happen. The Russians can't possibly afford to do that these days. And also, I mean, they don't trust America, you know, to stick to anything, because once again, you have the 2028 elections. But I think, you know, there is a reasonable hope. And, you know, the commercial, I mean, that's very much what Dmitriev was in Washington for as well. I mean, I think there is a hope that you could, to some extent, decouple, but only to a limited extent, Russia and China economically. And that, for example, you know, if you can have a peace settlement in which Russia once again sells gas to Europe, which would be very good for Europe as well, well, that would diminish China's energy security, you know, because which depends very heavily on importing oil and gas by land and not by sea, which the US could intercept. And of course, it would be good for Russia, because at the moment, with Russia shut out of Western energy markets, you know, China is in a buyer's market and has been in a position pretty ruthlessly to fix the price to its advantage. So one can see how, you know, nothing on the scale of Nixon to China, but one can see how you could have a degree of decoupling which would be useful from a U.S. point of view.
I'm speaking with Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, talking about these two representatives traveling to two different capitals to present a case to Mr. Trump and Mr. Putin for the end of the Ukraine war. The largest story, however, remains NATO. And when we come back, where is NATO in these state-to-state negotiations? I'm John Batchelor.